This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Thursday, July 21st. I'm Angela Denning. One of Southeast Alaska's ferries stalled near Petersburg yesterday. The southbound Columbia ferry arrived in Petersburg early in the morning and was scheduled to depart shortly after, but an unexpected delay left the boat parked in town where it remains today. Alaska Marine Highway spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says a mechanical issue with the ship's starboard engine required the ferry to remain moored.
It will remain there as long as the AMHS technicians are troubleshooting the situation. We're working on an action plan. We've notified passengers on board and all other passengers that would be on the southbound sailings of the situation.
Woodrow says there will be travel delays for passengers scheduled to ride the Columbia this week.
We will be calling passengers when we have a better idea of how long the Columbia will be delayed and what the repair timeline will be.
Several passengers say they've been told the best-case scenario gets them to Bellingham, Washington by Saturday evening. In the meantime, they have been provided free meals on the ferry. Some passengers have found flights off Mitkoff Island. Alaska Marine Highway System staff are working on an action plan and flying in technicians from Houston, Texas, to diagnose the problem and to help repair the boat. It has two engines, but it's unclear whether it could make it through the Wrangell Narrows with only one of them functioning. According to Woodrow, there are alternative transportation options for Columbia passengers, depending on where they're heading, though it would mean sailing on a different day.
So trying to, say, go from Petersburg to Juneau or Wrangell or Cake. The other alternative is the Matanuska, which does sail north at least once a week and south once or twice a week as well.
But for those headed to Bellingham, Washington from Petersburg or Wrangell, Woodrow says right now the Columbia is the only ferry option. Updates may be posted on ferryalaska.com, and a notice will be sent to customers when they have a better idea of the timeline for repairs. The Columbia is one of Alaska's main ferries running routes between Skagway and Bellingham. The Petersburg Medical Center is postponing the Paddle Battle fundraiser until next weekend. The decision was made to change the date because of the weather predicted for this Saturday. Chad Wright is executive assistant for the medical center.
We looked at the weather forecast, and it's looking like wind and rain and waves, so just for the safety of the paddlers, a concern for them. We want this to be a fun event. We've decided to postpone the paddle battle.
The event has been moved to next Saturday, July 30th. Because the tides will be different, the new starting time is 8:30 a.m. at Papke's. Kayakers will paddle up the Wrangell Narrows to Sandy Beach, a distance of about 14 miles. There are also starting points at Scow Bay and South Harbor later in the morning for those not wanting to do the full trip. The Paddle Battle is the Petersburg Medical Foundation's largest fundraiser of the year. This is the third year it's been held. Wright says the money raised makes a difference.
Previous years, the funds have gone to the long-term care facility and for parallel bars in the physical therapy department. And this year's funds will be going to purchase an ergonomic shower chair for the residents in long-term care. And that just makes it easier for the residents and the employees that are bathing those residents.
More information about the Paddle Battle can be found on PMC's website, pmcak.org, or on the event's Facebook page. You can also find links on our website, kfsk.org. Petersburg Borough's Assembly was united in their voting during Monday's regular meeting. Everything they voted on came out with unanimous support, including issues on marijuana. The Borough Assembly unanimously approved two marijuana ordinances. One sets marijuana regulations in place for the borough, and the other establishes fines for breaking those laws. But that was just a few of the ordinances and resolutions that assembly members agreed on. They also approved updated language to the borough's Smoke-Free Air Act. The act prohibits smoking in public places and places of employment. The new language adds e-cigarettes to the definition of smoking, so they would be regulated the same as cigarettes. Also, any future marijuana retail stores would be included in the smoking ban. Assembly members heard from Katie Yeckley, the Director of Tobacco Prevention and Control with Petersburg Indian Association. She asked the Assembly to increase the smoking ban distance from 5 feet to 25 feet from businesses and other public places.
It's a self-enforced law with proper signage and education to the community. if we change it and we, you know, let people know, people will see the signs and they will self-enforce.
The Assembly did not increase the distance and approved the ordinance with the changes they had already considered. Another ordinance had Assembly supporting additions to the fiscal year 2017 budget for known changes. The budget would increase for three items. One, a $41,000 grant to the borough for the Hungry Point Trail expansion. Another is a $149,000 Homeland Security grant for public safety communications equipment. And finally, $86,000 in remaining Secure Rural Schools funding to be used for paving and patching various streets in town. Then the Assembly agreed on a resolution authorizing more paving on borough streets. The group also unanimously approved a resolution supporting a state income tax over a state sales tax, issues that the governor and legislators have been considering to bring in more revenue. Assemblyman Bob Lynn said a state sales tax would hurt smaller communities more.
When you look at the state of Alaska, one of the things you have is a lot of the smaller communities, like similar size to Petersburg, even smaller, have a sales tax in place, whereas a lot of your bigger municipalities do not. And so what happens is that if you put an additional 3% or 6% from the state on top of what we have, that would put our local sales tax in at 9% or higher.
But Lynn says an income tax would also include visiting workers.
An income tax then reaches out to all those, even those who make their income in Alaska, but then take that out of state. Quite a difference.
Assemblyman J. Stanton Greger agreed, saying the sales tax hurts poor people the most.
Sales taxes are regressive, and for those of us who don't know regressive taxes, they hurt people on the lowest end of the income spectrum the most. And just on an ethical level, I have a problem with that. It doesn't seem equitable to me.
Also at the meeting, the Assembly unanimously approved a change order of $86,000 for work on two pump stations and a sewage line. Assistant Public Works Director Chris Cotta told the Assembly that the work was done last summer along South Nordic Drive, but negotiations with the state about the cost has drawn out.
The biggest part of that cost was for, when we're excavating under the road, we just found a lot more mud and organic material than we thought we were going to find. And so to take that material away and then replace it with rock, adds money to the contract.
Also at the meeting, the Assembly approved several planning permits. The next regular meeting for the Petersburg Borough Assembly is August 1st at noon. Wrangell is in a water crisis. Between two fish processors and the public, demand is exceeding the water treatment system's ability to produce clean water. The Assembly and Borough Manager declared a local emergency disaster on Tuesday and are asking the public to cut water consumption 30% to 50%. KSTK's Aaron Bolton reports from Wrangell.
Water plant manager Wayne McHolland says Wrangell's treatment system was never designed for the community's water source.
It's designed for spotlessly clean water coming into it. We don't have that, and we never have. It's never worked since the beginning.
The system was designed for groundwater, which is dramatically cleaner than Wrangell's water supplied by two reservoirs. McHolland says the surface water is too dirty and slows the treatment process.
Regardless, it comes into the plant, and we have inefficiencies in our roughing filter system, and it goes through, and then all this dirt ends up in the main filters, which clogs them extremely rapidly, especially when it's as dirty as it is.
The Public Works Department has been cleaning the filters every few days, costing the plant valuable production time. The filters are designed to last 3 months.
Yeah, it takes us about 200,000 gallons to do maintenance on a filter. From the initial loss of dumping a filter, which we can't recover, which is the major loss, and then about another 50,000 to do the maintenance on it.
The plant can produce up to 1.4 million gallons of water per day and can store about 850,000 gallons at a time. The plant had about 40% of that capacity Wednesday morning. The Assembly unanimously voted to declare a local emergency disaster to tap into state resources as well as bypassing procurement codes. Bypassing the codes will allow Borough Manager Jeff Jaybush to quickly pursue any solutions to the crisis. The borough is moving forward on modifying the system's filters in hopes of speeding up production. It expects to spend $25,000 on that modification. Plant manager McHolland is unsure how much it'll help speed up water treatment. Public Works Director Amber Aladad says Wrangell's two seafood processors, Trident and Sea Level Seafoods, account for a little over half of the demand. Aladad says both processors have been conserving water, but both Trident and Sea Level say their production has been limited by the borough for about 2 weeks, costing thousands of dollars.
I cannot manage that plant the way we're running right now. Cannot do it. I can manage the plant with something, but I cannot manage it with nothing.
John Webby is a manager for Trident. He says it has cut water consumption in half and shut down for 3 days during the last 2 weeks. He says the plant has diverted about 1.5 million pounds of fish to other Trident locations. Webby asked the assembly to find a way to split available water between the two processors.
I believe that whatever available water there is, whatever it is for the processors, it has to be determined by the council or by the water department or engineering. Whatever that is, I think there should be a fair, equitable divide in that water, because that's not what's happening right now.
Aladad says her department is looking into a way to evenly split water usage. Vern Phillips manages Sea Level. He says it has modified the plant's plumbing to use salt water, reducing its fresh water intake by about 60%. Phillips says Sea Level doesn't have another location to divert tenders to, like Trident, causing the plant to throw out thousands of dollars in product.
Took grab yesterday, and of what we had in the system, there was about 2,000 pounds of dead crab that was wasted. So, you know, that in itself was about $6,600.
The borough is testing a new type of water treatment later this month in hopes of solving the problem which has plagued Wrangell for years. The pilot study was funded with grant money earlier this year. Aladad says if the treatment proves successful, the department will seek funding to convert Wrangell's plant. The assembly has added the conversion to the next regular meeting, July 26th. The new system would add about 1 million gallons of storage capacity and treat water faster. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Aaron Bolton.
And the Wrangell Borough has created a page to update the public on the water crisis, as well as a Q&A. You can find those links to the page and more about the water crisis that's going on in Wrangell at kstk.org. Juneau's privately owned electric utility, which is AELNP, has already broken ground to build an industrial diesel plant to meet growing demand. And for the city's residents, that means the price for electricity is likely to go up. Before the development goes any further, some community members are asking the state's regulatory commission to take a closer look. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins reports from Juneau.
Brian Farrell, an engineer for Juneau's electric utility, asked me to put on a blue hard hat before showing me around.
Just all our work site. We got
construction on the $22 million project began in January, and already there are two 50,000-gallon tanks installed that will feed a diesel turbine.
A diesel turbine is exactly what it sounds like. It is a combustion turbine that compresses air, injects diesel fuel as a fuel source, and ignites that to turn another turbine, which then turns a generator.
A backup generator, according to AELNP. It could also run off liquefied natural gas, something that Avista, that's the utility's parent company, has been looking at bringing to Juneau. Right now, on a normal day, the city runs entirely off hydro. But when something goes wrong, like an avalanche takes down a power line, that service can be disrupted. That actually happened in the spring of 2008. And Farrell says when that occurs, the diesel is the backup.
We have diesel strategically placed throughout the system, and this spot is going to add greatly to that strategy.
The location for the diesel plant is in a Juneau area called the Mendenhall Valley, and the electric company says growing demand is the reason. In other words, more people powering their homes and businesses in that area. Farrell says if another catastrophe happened,
I do not have enough diesel generation in the valley to pick up all of the valley in that situation. So what that would turn into in any sort of long-term effort would be rotating blackouts for different areas of the valley.
Why would we bring in a new fossil fuel monopoly when we have local, clean, abundant energy in the form of responsible hydropower?
That's Danielle Redmond, a Juneau climate change activist. She sent a letter to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska asking for community input. To pay for the new diesel plant, the electric company will have to increase rates, and that's when the Regulatory Commission gets involved. On top of that, Redmond thinks the diesel plant doesn't reflect the city's overall values.
For me, it's more of an issue that if we continue to build infrastructure, we're not going to make investment in clean, renewable alternatives.
The city recently drafted an energy plan outlining goals for moving away from burning fossil fuels, like diesel. But Tim McLeod, AELNP's president, says investing in renewable energy in an emergency situation doesn't make sense.
First off, diesel generation for backup is a fraction of the cost to our customers as building a new hydro would be.
In 2010, after the company completed the Lake Dorothy Hydro Project, McLeod says Juneau's electric rates went up nearly 20%. He thinks backup hydro doesn't pencil out and would wind up costing customers more. As to how much the diesel plant will raise rates,
this will be much less than that, but I don't know what the numbers are.
AELNP has yet to file paperwork with the Regulatory Commission about the rate increase. For Danielle Redman, the problem isn't about being stuck with the bill.
May well be the case that Juneau ratepayers would be willing to pay a little bit more for additional hydropower capacity in favor of keeping new fossil fuel projects out of town.
Redman says she certainly would, but she might not have a choice in the matter. AELNP expects to have its new diesel generation plant operational by this winter. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
And I'm Angela Denning. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. Thanks for listening.